regulation, fascination.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
Good morning from American Public Media in Los Angeles. I'm Steve Chiatakis. President Obama is set to unveil a number of financial regulatory proposals this week. He's already got some in his administration touting what's to come in op-ed pieces. Treasury Secretary Tim Geithner and Obama's chief economic advisor Larry Summers published an outline in today's Washington Post. The latest from Marketplace's Steve Henn.
For more than a year, the feds have struggled to answer this question. What should regulators do with banks and insurance companies deemed too big or interconnected to fail? Bailing them out is obviously not a long-term solution. The administration's plan gives the Fed new powers to oversee huge firms and the ability to unwind them and take them apart if they begin to collapse. The idea is to recreate on a larger scale what the FDIC has done for years in the banking industry. The plan would also regulate derivatives like credit default swaps and derivative traders. It would require firms that create new mortgage-backed securities or bundles of credit card debt to invest some of their own money in these assets. But the plan does little to streamline the alphabet soup of agencies that already police banks and securities markets. In Washington, I'm Steve Henn for Marketplace.
Question for you this morning. Where's Wall Street? Down right now, the S&P down about 16 points or a percent and three quarters. Same for the Dow and NASDAQ. Stocks are down a percent and a half to 2% in Europe right now. Over in Asia, the Nikkei and Hang Seng both had losses for the day. Sam Stovall is chief investment strategist at S&P Equity Research. He joins us this morning live from New York. Hello, Sam.
Good morning, Steve.
So investors not feeling it today. They've been a picky bunch lately. I mean, we've been seeing some nice gains over the last few months, especially with the S&P up, what, 40% since the lows in March? What's going on today?
Well, that's right. The market was up 12 of the last 14 weeks, up 40%. We retraced 30% of what we lost in the entire bear market. But I think markets are getting a little bit rattled by comments by the G8 finance ministers hinting that maybe some of the stimulus should start to be removed so as to not overheat the prospects of rising inflation.
So if you're not a big-time investor, Sam, but just hoping to catch sort of a wave, what do you do? Do you pick from the best-performing stocks since March, or do you look somewhere else?
Well, no, I think that you look somewhere else. The best performing stocks have done wonderfully since the March 9th low. But as the old saying goes, bulls get rich, bears get rich, but pigs get slaughtered. So I think going forward, at least in the near term, investors should be focusing more on value-oriented stocks rather than growth-oriented issues.
And Sam, explain this to me. Russia's finance minister said over the weekend, hey, no one's pulling out the dollar anytime soon. And then the dollar saw this nice boost after that. I mean, what's up with the statement and more importantly, what's up with the reaction?
Well, what it implies is that the other countries are saying that they still are voting a vote of confidence for the U.S. dollar as the reserve currency, or in a sense, the currency that most countries will favor during times of crises. So as a result, that's now putting strength underneath the treasury market, which had been experiencing some weakness as investors worried that, gee, maybe nobody will be buying all of the additional debt we'll have to take on to pay off the stimulus. In reverse, it's hurting gold and oil.
All right. Sam Stovall, Chief Investment Strategist at S&P Equity Research. Thanks for joining us.
You're welcome, Steve.
I do appreciate it. Today we learned foreign demand for long-term U.S. financial assets dropped in April. Both China and Japan trimmed their holdings of Treasury securities. Net purchases of stocks, notes, and bonds obtained by foreigners fell 80% between March and April. Nothing like more spreadable Vegemite to make that sandwich go down a lot smoother. Kraft Foods in Australia says it is adding cream cheese to debut a newer version of the popular product. Kraft says it's a milder version of the yeast extract that Aussies have been eating now for 9 decades. The new, creamier Vegemite goes on sale July 5th. You're listening to The Morning Report for Monday, June 15th, 2009 at Marketplace.org. The Paris Air Show opened this morning. It's the show's 100th anniversary. But the recent Air France Flight 447 crash has cast a cloud over the event. And as Stephen Beard reports, current economic conditions aren't inspiring much celebration either.
Aircraft makers exhibiting at this year's show were inundated, but not with orders. It poured with rain, a fitting backdrop for an industry immersed in gloom. The customers, the world's airlines, are set to lose some $9 billion this year, so they're reluctant to buy any new planes. And with budget deficits widening everywhere, defence spending is under pressure too. Howard Wealdon is aviation analyst with the BGC Group. He says that Boeing, Airbus and the other plane makers in Paris won't be bragging as usual about bulging order books.
The attention this year is very much on the number of order deferrals and cancellations rather than orders. It's a pretty grim picture at the moment, very sad.
Boeing had hoped to lift the gloom in Paris by flying the much-delayed 787 Dreamliner, but that's now thought unlikely to make its maiden flight until next week. In London, this is Stephen Beard for Marketplace.
Apple's been a busy little technological fruit lately. Just in the past week, it's unveiled a faster iPhone, some amped-up laptops, and it also cut the price of some of its merchandise. Now, if you're an Apple user, it's no surprise that Apple likes to surprise people with those kinds of announcements, but it can make for some frustrated customers. Here's Marketplace's Stacey Vanek-Smith.
My colleague Brendan hasn't bought a new computer in 6 years, so he was very excited when his new MacBook came.
It arrived on Friday, beautiful aluminum-bodied laptop, and then Monday come to work, reading the news, and they just changed the price points on like all of their products. And so I was kind of bummed.
Brendan's new computer now cost about $400 less than the week before, so he got on the phone, along with hundreds of other people.
Welcome to Apple. Due to higher than expected phone volumes, you may experience longer than expected hold times.
Yankee Group analyst Josh Martin says Apple cultivates mystery around its new products to create buzz, so consumers like Brendan never know the right time to buy.
Apple's toting the line between releasing innovative products and enticing consumers, but also frustrating them at the same time.
Martin says all the calls and returns are costly for Apple, but the hype is worth it. Brendan was on hold for more than an hour, but he got Apple to refund the difference. I'm Stacey Vanek-Smith for Marketplace.
You probably heard the news over the past few days. The World Health Organization has designated swine flu as a global pandemic. Drug makers are gearing up for large-scale vaccine production, and businesses are being urged to review their procedures for dealing with an outbreak that could affect them. Here's Marketplace senior business correspondent Bob Moon.
When World Health Organization Chief Margaret Chan made the pandemic official at the end of last week, she offered some encouraging words.
We are all in this together. And we will all get through this together.
But togetherness might not be such a good idea if the flu starts spreading through the workplace. Gartner is telling its clients to prepare for steps that could help isolate the virus. Rick Delotto is a Gartner analyst.
In many cases, companies can arrange it so that their key employees, and maybe even more than key employees, have the ability to work from home.
2 years ago, the financial services industry ran a simulation of a severe flu pandemic. It found many small and medium businesses would be more likely to try distancing employees with staggered work shifts or by separating personal workspaces. For now, though, Delotto says businesses should be stressing personal hygiene.
Be prepared to answer questions from your staff. People are hearing pandemic for real now, and they think that suddenly there's going to be a wave of sickness tomorrow. Bring the facts in. The facts will generally bore people, and they'll get back to work.
He points out pandemic merely means the virus is spreading, not becoming more severe. I'm Bob Moon for Marketplace.
President Obama is scheduled to address the American Medical Association's annual meeting in Chicago later this morning, but the folks in the audience may not entirely agree with what he has to say about health care reform. The president said he is strongly in favor of creating a public health insurance plan, but the influential AMA is pretty cool to the idea. Tamara Keith has more.
The American Medical Association represents 250,000 doctors, people who have quite a stake in the outcome of President Obama's health care reform push. AMA President Dr. Nancy Nielsen says her organization doesn't think a public insurance plan is the best option.
We haven't had exactly the most wonderful experience with government-run plans, but we are looking at all the options that are on the table.
The AMA is the nation's largest physician organization and has long influenced health policy debates. Jonathan Oberlander is an associate professor at the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill.
Part of their concern about the public plan, I think, is ideological and a resistance to the idea of public insurance. Part of it is financial. They worry that a public plan will control costs by holding down what doctors are paid. And so they're trying to represent the financial interests of physicians.
And that's just one of the competing interests in this debate. In Washington, I'm Tamara Keith for Marketplace.
The recession has hit Hispanic immigrants particularly hard. Nearly 12% of Hispanics are unemployed. That's double the rate from a year ago. So are immigrants, particularly those from Mexico, heading back home to escape the recession? From the America's Desk at WLRN in Miami, Marketplace's Dan Gretsch reports.
For 6 months now, Mexico has been preparing for an influx of returning migrants. The northern state of Zacatecas set aside $1 million for education, health care, and job training for returnees. And it's asked the central government for millions more. Fernando Robledo heads the Zacatecas Institute of Migration.
When the economic situation for migrants in the U.S. is really difficult, when they don't have jobs or a way to pay their rent, then they will return home.
Felipe Ruiz Fernandez lived in California for 16 years. Now he's back in his hometown of Jerez in Zacatecas. Fernandez used the money he saved in the U.S. to buy a $10,000 embroidering machine that's become the talk of the town. Business at his store is hopping. Fernandez says he's read in the local paper about an influx of returning migrants like him.
The papers told me a lot of people is coming from USA because the situation is too bad. I don't know. I didn't see somebody.
You haven't seen them come yet?
No, not yet.
That's because there's been no influx, says Wayne Cornelius, a migration expert at the University of California, San Diego.
The vast majority of migrants are simply hunkering down and sacrificing and doing whatever is necessary to ride this out.
Since the start of the recession, the number of Mexicans crossing into the U.S. has fallen sharply, by 40%. But the number of Mexicans returning home has remained steady. That's because there are still fewer well-paying jobs in Mexico than in the U.S. Jeff Passell is a demographer with the Pew Hispanic Center.
There's always, in good times and bad, people returning to Mexico. Somewhere between 400,000 and 500,000 Mexicans who are in the U.S. return to Mexico on an average year.
And of course, some of those later return to the U.S. I'm Dan Gretsch for Marketplace.
Get the National Association of Home Builders Wells Fargo Housing Market Index later this morning. It's a nationwide gauge of builder sentiment. But it is a big trade association, and Fortune magazine's Alan Sloan says he thinks by nature it's a wee bit too optimistic. Good morning, Alan.
Morning, Steve.
So what do you mean optimistic?
Well, home builders are by their nature optimistic because they're building homes and they want people to buy them. And their motto, I've covered real estate forever, is it's a great day to buy a new home. So what matters is not so much the number of the index, but is the number higher or lower than it's been in previous months or in the month a year ago? That's a much better way to look at it than just to look at the number itself, which doesn't tell you very much.
So, Alan, are any of the other housing indicators giving us a clear idea of what the market's like?
Well, it's mixed, okay? Mortgage rates are up, which is generally not a good thing for the housing market. Loan applications are down, which probably has something to do with interest rates rising. And then there's foreclosures, which, depending on whether you're an optimist or a pessimist, are either up or down. So I would say the numbers are mixed, but there's obviously a lot of foreclosures and a lot of stuff yet to come.
So who wins or loses then in this environment?
Well, it depends. If you're a first-time home buyer, you're clearly winning because you get to buy things cheap at still a relatively low mortgage with maybe an $8,000 credit. If you're trying to sell an expensive house and move into a cheaper one, well, you're probably a loser because you're not going to get anywhere near as much for the expensive house as you thought you might get. And if you're changing homes, you know, because your family is bigger, you're moving or something like that, then you're probably breaking even because you'll get less when you sell, but you'll pay less when you buy. So in other words, it all depends.
Fortune magazine's Alan Sloan joining us this morning. Alan, thanks.
You're welcome, Steve.
Hope you can check us out at our website and check out the Scratchpad with online host and blogger Scott Jagow and share your thoughts there at marketplace.org in Los Angeles. I'm Steve Chiotakis. Have a great Monday.
American Public Media.
The River Fowle in Cornwall, England is a big tourist draw. They come for the scenic coves, the wildflowers, and the giant stranded ships.
You don't expect it. You don't think that the river would cope with such big vessels at all, yeah. And then so many of them, yeah, that's quite interesting to see.
I'm Kai Rizdal, Eyesores. Next time on Marketplace, it's from American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.